This episode of the Infamous Podcast is brought to you by the Flying Pork Apparel Company.
The Flying Pork Apparel Company is an awfully long name to fit into a 15-second ad. We're most likely going to have to cut it short, but our designer tees and customer services are like way long on quality. Visit flyingporkapparel.com and shirt yourself, folks. Thank you.
Hey, welcome back to the Infamous Podcast. This is Brian.
This is Johnny.
And this is episode 172. What's up?
Nothing. Why did you say it all excitedly? Like 172?
Because it's almost 175.
Which matters in no way whatsoever.
No, none whatsoever. Anyway, all right. So this week we say goodbye to George Perez, but
that sounds like he died.
No, he's retiring from comics.
We say farewell.
That sounds like he died too.
No, I don't.
I know, I'm kidding. And then we're going to talk about Glass.
Especially since, like, when people have died, you're always like, we say goodbye.
Anyway, yeah, we're going to talk about Glass as well. So, because we both actually saw it. All right. So, George Perez.
So, George Perez
announced his retirement just this week. Did you read the whole letter?
Yeah, I read the whole letter.
It was really nice. And, you know,
Well, of course I read the whole letter.
His health has been declining for the past few years and everything. I tell you what, I'm really excited that I got my Absolute Crisis on Infinite Earths signed by him.
Yeah, he said he's still going to do some shows.
Yeah. So. Well, he has a list of the shows he's doing for the rest of the year in his farewell.
He'll be at Dragon Con every year.
Yeah. Does he live in Atlanta?
He lives in Orlando area, I think. Somewhere in Florida. Maybe, okay. I think Orlando area.
Cool.
But, like, Dragon Con just is one of those shows he's done every year for a very long time.
Cool, cool.
That's where I've met him a couple times.
Nice. You know, he was always he's always an important artist to me because of Teen Titans.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's just one of those things where looking back at the things he did with Marvel and DC, he was involved in...
Well, he's pretty much drawn everybody at one point or another.
So I totally forgot that he drew Infinity Gauntlet.
Mm-hmm.
Don't know how I forgot
that. He drew parts of it.
So, well...
Yeah. But he drew parts of Infinite Crisis. Yep. And, I mean, he was one of those guys you call in when the other guy's running slow.
Yeah.
And, I mean, you know, he's done everything. Done a little bit of everybody's work.
Yeah.
And that, so.
I always liked his Superman, the way he drew him.
I liked stumping him one time.
When?
Well, he used to do, like, head sketches for $20.
Yeah.
Down at Dragon Con. And everybody's, you know, doing Robin, Superman, and that. And I get up there and I asked him to do Kilowog. Nice. And he literally was like, hold on one second. And he stood there and you could see the brain working. And then he was just like, boom, 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 got it, like, pumped it out, like, that fast.
He had that mental Rolodex of DC headshots, like,
literally,
kill,
was like
got
that.
It.
It was like, you know.
Download to the hand, to the paper.
It's like, got to make sure that looks like Kilowog.
That's really cool. I always liked his Firestorm as well.
Yeah.
So.
He did. I mean, there wasn't a character that he didn't do that didn't look awesome.
No.
For a hand-drawn. Yeah. You know, like, Alex Ross paints everybody beautifully.
Right.
George Perez draws everybody beautifully.
Yes.
So, I mean, even characters I didn't know, you know, from other comic book companies and that he did, I was like, that looks cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He was amazing. You know, he also is near and dear to my heart because him and Marv with Nightwing and everything on Teen Titans and, you know, that original Nightwing, I still love.
Yeah.
With the super
disco,
high,
disco Nightwing. Nightwing.
Yeah. I always liked the way that Christopher Jones drew him as well.
Yeah.
So, and it was very much in the vein of Perez. Anywho, so
I mean, it's one of those things where it's like it sucks for fans, but for him, it's like, you know, good for you.
Yeah.
You worked your butt off. You know, take care of yourself. You know, hang out with your wife, do things.
Yeah, enjoy.
It's not like he's not gonna still be drawing. He's just not gonna be drawing for the public.
Right.
And that he'll do stuff, and he said if the right project comes along, you may see him back for a little while. And yeah. I would say that, you know, they could get him back to do covers probably at any time. But
maybe, yeah.
DC kind of burnt their bridge with him.
Yeah.
You know, with the whole New 52 Superman
mm-hmm.
thing where he quit pretty yeah. much. Oh, I yeah. mean, you know, so I'm sure if Marvel throws enough money at him, they could get him to do something.
Maybe, yeah. I mean, he
but
he
I'm fine with that, you know.
I mean, even if he never does anything again, he's earned a nice, comfortable retirement. I mean,
look at how many characters he has done.
Yeah.
You're just like, well, you've done enough for my lifetime.
And then some.
Yeah.
I mean, Rob Liefeld still is cashing in on Deadpool.
Yeah.
You know? So, and I'm that's
sure
like,
Perez drew Deadpool.
I'm sure he did. He does say in his little farewell letter, as for home commission requests, I'm afraid that my retirement must now extend to privately commissioned drawings as well.
Mm-hmm.
While I'm gratified that all the customers who have received their pieces were more than pleased with results, blah, blah, blah. It's just too much on his eye strain.
Well, right. And his one eye is like pretty much gone.
To do fully rendered inks right. and pencil tones to a quality that justifies the price that people pay him for.
Right.
So, I mean, that's great that he understands, like that he recognizes that. And like he it shows he's concerned about his legacy, you know, yeah. and he doesn't want to be one of these guys who just does it. Right.
Just to like, do just take for money.
Yeah.
Take
just
money
to like. You know,
well, and there's that thought that he can do pencil sketches. He probably will do them eventually.
Yeah.
You know, it'll be the thing where he'll be like, I can do pencil sketches.
Yeah.
And then if you want somebody to ink over George Perez, I mean, there's not many people I would have do that.
No.
But maybe Phil Jimenez or Jimmy Palmiotti,
yeah.
you know, those guys are pretty good inkers over Perez. So.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's one of those things where it's like, hey, thanks for everything you've done.
Yeah, man. Thank you.
Hope you have a good retirement.
Thank you for what you did for the comic community and all the great characters and, you know, being a super nice guy when you meet him.
Oh, yeah.
So
there's never a moment that he wasn't a nice guy when I met him.
Right.
You know, handshakes and hugs
yeah.
and all that type of stuff.
So,
I mean, he's one of the guys that the newer guys should definitely like take a
emulate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just take a piece of him from. You know, and use it. I mean, you know, like I said, there's guys like him and Darwin Cook.
Yeah.
Jimmy Palmiotti.
Yeah.
Even Joe Quesada.
Yeah.
Joe Quesada, I met Joe Quesada a couple different times over the years. And in person, genuinely a nice guy. You know, it could be an act, but I think it's just, you know, he likes to be around the fans.
Right.
And that, but like Perez and Darwin were probably two of the coolest like artists
yeah.
out of the
yeah.
comic book artists that I ever met. So
no, that's cool. And you know, like my interaction with him was getting that
yeah.
That book signed.
Sure.
And he signed every part of it. He signed the case, he
right.
signed the yeah. the book, the compendium, like, you know,
he's one of the ones that appreciates the fans, understands mm-hmm. what his legacy is, and you know, will be happy to, you know,
yeah,
say anything or talk to you. Or I mean, now it's like one of those things where it's like you don't have to come to a show and draw or anything, just come to a show and do panels,
hang out.
Yeah. But, which is, you know, Dragon Con pretty much is what he does, is
yeah.
he hangs out because
yeah,
he loves
what you were saying.
He loves the cosplayers and all that. Like, you know, a lot of the time when you didn't find him at his table, he was out getting pictures with the cosplayers.
Was it his niece or granddaughter who's the really good cosplayer?
His niece did it for a while.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think he has any kids.
No, okay.
Yeah. But like his niece did cosplaying for a while, and you know, there was that too, because I think there was like something happened with a family, somebody passed away and that. So I'm sure that's part of the reason why he's retiring too.
Yeah.
And that, but that's been a couple years ago.
Yeah. I think, you know, one of the things he did best was like these sprawling pages with,
oh yeah,
just the detail with 100 heroes on there. And
you're talking like the Crisis.
Yeah. The Crisis and stuff.
Yeah.
And you know, even like if you look at his work on Wonder Woman, like with the mascara and
oh, well,
all of
one
that,
of the,
so.
One of the images that always, like I would sit there at Queen City Comics and stare at was the 25th anniversary poster from Avengers.
Oh yeah.
Where it was just literally every Avenger. Mm-hmm. And then, and eventually Dynamic Forces did a print of that, and I got it.
Yeah.
Because I was just like, that's...
Like this one with...
Yeah, oh, yeah, the Ultron. The Kurt Busiek and his run on Avengers were, like, some of the best stuff around.
Oh, yeah. So, Infinity Gauntlet there. Yeah. That was awesome. Anyway, yeah, it's one of those things where there are very few artists who are as genuinely nice and...
Yeah,
fan friendly. Not to say that they aren't all, for the most part, genuinely nice and fan friendly. But yeah, you get a few in there, and like as some of them have gotten older, they become less fan friendly. Not to name any names.
The thing that I understand is because the fan base now is much more aggressive.
Yeah,
than they were when I first started going to conventions and, you know, stuff like that.
Right.
So I mean, you know. Mid-Ohio Con, when it existed, everybody was so laid back because it was just a laid back convention.
Right.
I don't think Mid-Ohio Con could survive now.
No.
Well, it didn't. I mean, obviously it got bought out, but I think that like Roger Price, who ran it, was really a nice, you know, is a nice guy, you know, and just everybody that worked on that show was great. And everybody that came to that show was very laid back. I met Brian Michael Bendis at Mid-Ohio.
I remember you talking about that.
Yeah, so it's like, you know, it was a very laid-back show, a very fan-friendly show, and everybody was cool. But, like, over the years, you can tell where fans who aren't in it for the fanship just have become more aggressive. And I could see where I would lose my patience, too, and have at times.
Yeah.
Yes.
All right, well, you know, it is what it is, and you know, it's like, you know, it kind of sucks that people can't always be nice, and
but with his health and that, I'm like, you know, that's a bigger concern than drawing comic book characters.
Yeah.
And I think I seen Gannon Wilson retire too, which he had been around for a long time doing different stuff too in the comic book and Mad magazines and all that type of stuff. So that's another one that, you know, appreciate what they did.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
If you get to meet them, you know, thank them for their work.
Yeah. Just great stuff. So anyway, cool, man.
Yeah. I think I have a very large George Perez collection, so.
I think you do. All righty. So thank you, Mr. Perez, for all the stuff you did for us. You want to talk glass?
Sure.
Should we break the glass? That was a bad joke.
Bad pun.
Bad. And I hate puns. I don't know why I did that. All right. So.
Because you're punny.
Ah, ha, ha, ha. Glass is the 2019 American Superhero. I'm kidding. So.
I'm glad you don't have a soundboard because I could just hear the breaking glass. Continuously.
I will say, before we start talking about glass, Jason Blum.
Yeah.
Thank you, dude. Just thank you. Like,
for multiple things.
For multiple things, but mainly for what he's been doing with M. Night over the last few years.
I haven't seen The Visit yet.
Yeah.
That's the first thing they did together.
Right.
And that, but, you know.
And it was the first thing that M.
Thank him for pulling the creativity back out of M. Night.
Yeah. And so The Visit was the first thing M. Night directed that he didn't write himself, which was pretty interesting. And then when they went back to him doing his own stuff, Jason definitely has kept a level of clarity in what he's been doing. Yeah. So, you know, we both really are fond of Unbreakable, and Glass was excellent.
I think I need to go back and watch Split now with the director commentary.
Yeah.
Just to see what he says, because I didn't want to watch it because I was afraid he might spoil something for this movie.
Yeah.
So now I'm going to watch it because I'm very curious to see, like, if the idea of tying this to Unbreakable was there the whole time.
Oh, yeah. That's interesting. Interesting to think about.
Or was that just something where somebody said, hey, wouldn't it be cool?
Yeah.
So I get the feeling that he knew this was going to happen.
Maybe. Yeah. I mean, you know, he is a fan of twists, and the twist at the end being that it takes place in David Dunn's Philadelphia.
Well, yeah.
Was really cool.
Yeah.
So everybody was back for this, for the most part, except for Robin Wright Penn. I mean, she was the only real big name from...
Yeah, from all the other stuff.
From the other two that didn't show up. And they...
They explained that the best way they could.
Immediately,
that made
too.
Totally,
like,
sense.
It didn't take much time. Yeah. And, you know, they talked about it, and it had obviously happened a long time ago. So, yeah. Spencer Treat Willow.
Do you want to spoil this, or?
We can a little. I don't know. Yeah, why don't we? I mean, it's easier to
spoiler warning.
Spoilers, yeah, spoilers.
Spoiler warning. After this, don't listen to the show.
So, yeah.
Unless you've seen Glass.
So if you haven't seen Glass, spoiler warning, go watch it and come back. Or if you don't care, just keep listening. And here we go. All right. Spencer Treat Clark is back as Joseph.
Mm-hmm.
And man, so that kid has
been
in a bunch.
He was coming back.
Yeah.
Like, they announced that like pretty early on.
I keep forgetting how tall that guy has gotten.
Well, yeah.
You know, because when he was on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., like, there's some other taller actors
sure.
there. But,
yeah.
like, when you throw him next to Bruce Willis, it's like,
yep.
Dang, man, you actually are super tall now. And I want to see him in more stuff.
Yeah. He was really good on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
He was
really good on
Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. So.
Yeah. I think that, you know, he fell right back into the character in this movie.
Yeah.
And that, so.
So I rewatched Unbreakable on Sunday. This,
mm-hmm.
like, just the day before yesterday of recording this, a week after seeing,
sure.
Seeing Glass. And I forgot about the weightlifting scene.
Yeah. Yeah.
When he was like, you put too much on. And he's like, well, how much was it? He's like, 250 pounds. And he goes, okay, I'll take some off. And he puts more weight on.
Right, yeah.
And it's like, well, how much is it now? And he's like, 300 and
yeah.
whatever pounds. And they're like, what else can you lift? Like,
yep.
and I felt like that sense of wonder that he had in that scene and, like, the love he has for, like, his dad is in, like, he's not just some guy.
Right.
Like, he so totally carried that into this movie and
oh, yeah.
was using it. I like that, Dad, you're getting tired
yeah.
bit. So
you need to slow down.
You
don't need to go for a walk.
You don't need to go for
when
a walk.
When they got in a slight argument about going for a walk and Shyamalan's in the scene and it's like,
just
he
let
look,
him,
well,
just
he
let
looked
your dad
at him
go for
and
a
he
walk,
goes,
man.
Hey, didn't you work at the stadium? And it's like, oh, he's playing the same character he played
yeah.
from Unbreakable.
So, yeah, I fell in with some bad, with a bad crowd.
Yeah, I was
before.
With
that
the bad
really
crowd
good.
Back then.
Yeah, the whole, just let him take a fucking walk.
Yeah, just
man.
Let your dad take a walk.
So that was very, very funny. But so what did you think of the name of the Overseer?
Kind of weird, but
It kind of works though.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know what they called him coming out. I don't remember what they called
well,
him 19 years ago.
They didn't call him anything.
No, I mean, like,
Unbreakable, but
like that.
They mentioned other names
yeah.
that he had, and one was like the Green Man
yeah.
or the Green Cape Man or
yeah.
something like that.
The Poncho.
The Poncho. The Rain Man.
The Rain Man, yeah. Don't go in the water guy.
Yeah.
yeah. So I have a couple hot takes on this that we'll get to
sure.
later on. But so seeing David... And Joseph working like the father and son security business and then doing the vigilante thing on the side.
The security thing totally made sense.
Yeah.
Like the evolution of the characters that's where he would be at.
Yeah.
And that's where, you know, with Joseph, especially that's where he would be at.
Yeah. I mean,
you figure Joseph probably went to school for a couple years and didn't.
So that's what I wasn't sure about. And I was talking to, I think, Daryl about this. And I wasn't sure if this was like real time 19 years later.
I think
but
it was.
I think it was mentioned in dialogue.
Yeah.
So I wasn't sure if he was in high
well,
school.
Well, it was Mr. Glass.
Did he
actually
he said
says
that, okay.
It took 19 years.
You're right.
Yeah.
yeah. So like I for a minute there, I was like, is he still in high school or is he like, you know, out
well,
of high
been,
school?
What,
so
sixth grade, probably in the first.
So
one.
He's like 25.
Yeah, so he probably went to college for a couple of years and just decided, you know, it wasn't for him.
Or he went to college and he's just running the business. Oh, you know,
I think he was running the business. It was David wasn't running that business.
No.
No. David was just doing the thing that Mr. Glass set him on the path to do, but not so grand.
No, no, that's true.
Street thugs.
Street as Mrs. Goldberg would say on the Goldberg, street toughs.
Yeah.
So when those dudes are like, he's like, Superman punch him, Carl, or
yeah,
whatever.
Yeah.
Like, and then he follows them home, and he's like, the guy's like, Superman punch him, and it's like, yeah, that's not going to go well for you.
I like how he casually came into the house and washed his hands and turned off the light. And it's like, it's not the first time you've done this, right?
Threw him against the wall.
Yeah, throws him against the wall, and so. It's like, okay.
But yeah, and then following up with the Horde.
Yeah.
Like, I love that name, the Horde.
The Horde.
For the villain, sure. Right? Like, the Beast is a personality, but.
The group is the Horde.
But the whole, like, as a whole, it's the Horde, right? And I just
they're
love
the
that.
Horde. Yeah. The Beast is part of the Horde.
Right.
I like that they developed his voice a little bit more, the Beast's voice, so actually you could understand everything he was saying.
Well, and I think part of that, too, is it's been a little while since he's been on the run.
Well, they said it had been 3 months since the whole thing had happened with Split.
Yeah.
And that he first appeared, that the Beast first appeared.
Right.
Nobody knew it except, you know, I think it was 3 months or 6 months, something like that. It hadn't been too long. After the Split.
Yeah, this is relatively. I mean, because Split was just last year, so.
Right.
But, yeah.
But in that real time since they were going with it was only 3 or 4 months ago.
Right.
And David had been looking for him because they knew he was out there.
Well, they knew he was working and he had killed
right.
a bunch
he killed
of people.
Killed another group of girls.
Yeah. And, you know, Casey was still running around out there. And, do you have a favorite personality?
I don't know. I don't think so.
I really like Hedwig.
Yeah, well, Hedwig's just funny.
And
Hedwig's funny because you're like, that was James McAvoy as a kid.
Probably, right?
Yeah, that you're totally like...
A total spaz.
I'm like, James McAvoy's just bringing out his inner child.
And then I like Miss Patricia.
Well, yeah.
Mainly because when he like puts like the Miss Patricia like wardrobe on, he's so jacked.
Uh-huh.
Like, you know, it's really funny. And then Dennis is super creepy.
Yeah. The clean freak.
Yeah. Well, the weirdo, you know, he's a weirdo pervert too.
Well,
so he's the one who wants to kill the girls and, you know, all that. Not just the Beast. But he wants them to be pure. Not knowing suffering, which is why
he was going back and forth, though.
Yeah.
Because it seemed like he really didn't want to do it. He just was doing it for the purpose
of
the power.
Yeah. He wanted the light.
The light.
So.
Yeah.
That's the other cool thing is like who gets time in the light. And Kevin's not allowed to have time in the light.
Yeah.
So really
well, because Kevin's the weakest link.
But Kevin is the main personality.
Right,
and, you know,
they're all there to protect Kevin.
It's like... the whole like, well, I mean, a lot. Anytime you have like the multiple personality thing, but I it reminded me a lot of Rising Stars and the Critical Mass character and Stephanie Mass, and you know how Stephanie didn't have powers, but Critical did,
right.
And you know it was the whole split personality because of the abuse.
Well, I just like that original idea that this was based off of a true person, you know, that had that, and you know. One personality killed somebody, but it wasn't the main personality.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that worked out, and it worked for this because it was like, realistically, somebody like that could amp up, I guess, and become something, you know, supernatural.
Right.
In a sense.
Yeah, I mean, and...
Supernatural doesn't just involve ghosts and shit. Supernatural
can
be, your nature is more than it should be.
Yeah.
In that, so...
But, all right. So we're going to keep talking about this, but we're going to take a quick break, talk about some Flying Pork stuff, and we'll be right back and we'll talk about Mr. Glass.
Okay.
All right.
Let's be honest, shall we? The t-shirt thing isn't going away anytime soon, so you might as well get a garment with some backbone, yes? Well, Here comes the Flying Pork Apparel Company to address all your shirty moments in life with honor and respect. Maybe we create a custom tee for your shirty office party or knock out some smashing jerseys for your shirty softball team. There's also plenty of wearable tee designs available on our website. Having said all that, have a shirty day and visit us at flyingporkapparel.com. That's flyingporkapparel.com.
All right, don't forget to go to flyingporkapparel.com and get an Infamous Podcast shirt or, like, whatever. It doesn't have to be an Infamous Podcast shirt, but we'd prefer you buy an Infamous Podcast shirt. All right.
Buy what you want.
Yeah.
Just buy what
there's
you want.
There's a lot of cool stuff.
It's your money.
And some of our stuff is cool. And there's going to be some really cool, like, Star Wars-related stuff coming closer to Celebration. So that we're going to collaborate.
Cease and desist.
Yeah, right? All right. So, Mr.
Greatest
Glass.
Former compliment. Cease and desist.
Exactly, right? It's like, why not? So, Elijah's back.
Well,
Elijah Price,
I think the movie wouldn't be called Mr. Glass or called Glass.
The titular character. So, we catch up with Elijah in the institution. And
well, first you got to say that David was looking for the Horde.
Yeah. Oh.
They catch up with each other.
Oh, did we want to...
I mean, you're just like,
do we just
want to
go in order?
Yeah,
I was
going to
jump
yeah.
over that. Okay, all right. So we'll stick
you
with
have
order.
You have to go in order because it makes more sense.
Yeah, I guess that's right. Okay, so he catches up with him, and he just randomly runs into Hedwig down the street because he's patrolling.
I think that the thing that, like, you know, they, because Joseph seemed like he...
Well, Joseph figured out where he might be.
Yeah, it seemed like Joseph was smarter than you think he is. Because he kind of just came up with the idea of he's not where we think he is. He's over there. And that, so David was like, well, then I'll take a walk around there. And he walked and he did his, you know, bumping into people thing.
His intuition thing.
Yeah. And he was done
for
the day. And then Hedwig bumps into him.
Right.
And he sees the cheerleaders that, you know, we see at the beginning of the movie pretty much. And does his thing. Does a superhero thing.
So when the Beast throws the table at him.
And he catches it
and throws it right back. So cool.
Yeah.
Right? Like, when I saw that, it's like, I'm okay if this is the complete level of superpowers that we get in this movie. Like, I didn't want anyone to fly. I didn't want any laser beams.
David has never used his full potential.
Right.
And in that moment, he had to use his full potential. Yeah. And he knew he did. And what's he do? He catches the table in midair and throws it back at the dude.
Right.
And then it's like, you know, he knew at that moment that he was going to have to step up.
Yeah.
And he did.
Yeah.
And, you know, that fight
was really cool.
Yeah.
I liked when they went out the window.
And then the police show up.
Yeah, police. And this is where we get really the first look at Sarah Paulson's psychiatrist character.
Yeah. Was it in Claire?
Yeah, Claire. Oh, no, Ellie.
Ellie Staple.
Dr. Ellie Staple. You're thinking Charlene. No, never.
No, I was just thinking of something else, probably.
Anyway, so she's there with the police, and she starts talking them down. And they're giving the flashlight
show to the horde. David goes to run, and she pretty much tells him, if you run, you're going to hurt people, and you don't want to hurt people.
How many police officers are you going to hurt or kill? And he's like, all right, well, I'll just go with you.
Yeah. It's like at that point, it's like you have no choice.
Right. So I found her... She might be my favorite character in this movie.
Yeah?
She's super conflicted about what she's doing.
Not at all.
Because, well, hold on. Let me just hear me out. Like, she's not conflicted about her mission. She's conflicted about the humanity and how humanely she wants to treat these people.
No, I think that is part of her mission.
So,
especially when you find out at the end who she is.
So, you know, as a... Do we want to talk about the thing at the end? Or
yeah.
I mean,
if we're straight up spoiling this, then...
So, she's a part of what I'm calling the Black Clover Society. Just because they have Black Clover tattoos on the inside of their wrist. I feel like she's conflicted about killing them. Her goal is to convince them that they don't have superpowers.
I think that's the goal of the group.
Right. But she, I think she doesn't ever want to have them die. And so she's trying really hard to work with them to convince them that they don't have powers.
She didn't come off that way.
See, that's how I read that. No, and maybe she, that's just me.
She tells them, we killed people in other cities.
So another Sam Jackson movie, Jumper.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I liken them to the Paladins in Jumper.
Yeah.
But the Paladins in Jumper are straight up...
Well, they're any shadow society that's been in any comic book story.
But the Paladins in Jumper are straight up finding these people and just outright murdering them.
Right.
And these people are finding these people and trying to save them from themselves.
I think the rule of this group is that we convince them that they're not special.
Okay. Yeah.
This is what Heroes could have been. Like the TV show Heroes could have been.
Yeah.
You convince them, give them doubt... And they'll lose their powers.
Yeah.
And that, and then you either put them back in society or you terminate them.
Yeah. So
depending on how dangerous they are. And that's exactly the way that group came off.
I really liked the way she dealt with them. And I also liked the way she underestimated all three of them.
Oh, yeah.
And she underestimated them in all a different way, right?
The whole group did. The group had to have, because it's like, we've dealt with these people before. We've been dealing with these people for 10,000 years.
So, and
like, she literally says that. We've taken care of you guys for 10,000 years.
Because there was an uprising, remember, that she talked about how a group of people, villains, came together.
Well,
and so, you know, I thought, one... This is one of my favorite Sam Jackson performances in the last 10 years.
Oh, yeah.
I think he did such a great job of the subtlety of, is he really drugged up?
The facial tics were like the best thing that I've ever seen Sam Jackson do.
To go into the over-the-top Mr. Glass, right?
First name Mr., last name Glass.
Yeah. But the MG, like...
The lapel pin.
The suit was so good. The only thing that would have made it better...
Was that what he was wearing at the end of Unbreakable?
He was wearing a version of that. Okay. Yeah. So the only thing that would have made it better is if it would have been like an all-glass wheelchair. So
wow, that would have been like expensive.
And fragile. So him in the mental institution...
Yeah.
Is just so good. The two orderlies couldn't have been more different.
The different spectrums of the,
like the one is an abusive asshole.
Well, he didn't come off as abusive because like he was nice to Elijah. He was nice to him.
No, the one who was going to drop the.
Oh, he was just doing that because he thought he was faking.
Yeah.
And he wanted to see what his reaction would be. I don't feel like he was abusive. I think that like he just was afraid of him.
Maybe. Well, rightfully so.
Yeah, because they talked about how Elijah had shut down the entire security system in that place at one point.
Right.
That guy has been working there for long enough that he knows that. And it's like, you know, Elijah comes off as scary because there's no reaction there. He's supposed to be shut down. Whereas the other guys, you know,
the
peace,
hippie.
Peace, love, and rock and roll, man.
Take
your vitamins.
Peace, love, and organic fruit.
Organic fruit.
So,
backfiring car.
Oh god, that whole thing.
That was the whole. Out of all the things in this movie, I was like, I haven't heard a car backfire in years.
I didn't even know cars still did.
I was like,
you know,
what year is that car?
How little do they pay?
Like,
people?
Wait a minute, Shyamalan, so, you've ruined the whole movie with a backfiring car.
Dope.
Was an intricate moment in the movie.
Yeah.
So
yeah. It was fun, for sure. The way the orderlies treated him was great.
Yeah.
Then when Ellie puts the cameras in, and she makes it a point to gloat to him about it, about how we have every angle.
Before you even like get an idea of the Black Clover thing, that you know there's something off about her.
Yeah.
And I'm like, does she have powers too? I'm like, my first thought was, does she have powers too? Well, and then I'm like, something just isn't right about her.
Because there was the whole thing about like the Whisperer that he talked about.
Yeah.
Like, and it's like, is that her power?
Yeah.
Like, does she have the power of persuasion?
The one that was the villain comic book that Joseph looked at? Yeah.
I loved that scene where it was the flashback to the society in the restaurant and the one couple gets up and leaves.
Yeah.
And then everything stops and everybody stops
talking.
Well,
literally, because everybody that was in the room was that except for those one. Yeah.
Right.
The one just like at the end of the movie. Yeah. Yeah.
So when they leave and.
Well, and that was the thing is like David touches people. David gets a sense. She never got close enough for him to touch her.
Yeah.
And that was the thing where I was like, something, she's got something up her sleeve.
Right.
Because she's never gotten close enough to David. And he's not that much of a threat.
No, because Elijah did the same thing in the first movie in Unbreakable. Right. He never let him touch him until the very end.
Yeah. That's when he was like, well, now we got to shake hands. And that's what she does. She's a take my hand. Yeah. And I'm like, oh, boy.
So when he took her hand, though, he understood what was happening.
Yeah.
And he.
Well, he had to die at that
point.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So Mr. Glass and the Beast and that point of connectivity.
Yeah.
I thought it was really cool. I could see how it would feel a little shoehorned, but at the same time, it really wasn't.
Well, in Split, he talks about they have to go find the broken.
Right.
And it's like, you don't know that it's Mr. Glass. You don't know any of that, but until the end of the movie, then you're like, oh, the broken's Mr. Glass.
Yeah.
You like pretty much figure that. And that, so once he meets Mr. Glass, is like, you know, he thinks he's the broken, and I'm like, well, he's not the broken.
Yeah.
You've already met the broken. The broken was what's her name?
Anna. Casey.
Yeah, Casey.
Yeah.
She was the broken.
Yeah.
And that, which I said she had her own ability too, because her ability was to be able to love.
It was compassion. Yeah.
Yeah, the compassion, the love, you know, that she had for Kevin Wendell Crumb.
I liked when Hedwig was like, she's my girlfriend.
Yeah.
She kissed me.
Well, it's like, you know, she was held captive. She's seen her friends get killed, or not her friends, but people that, you know, she knew get killed. And it was the fact that some of the people that held her prisoner were not mean to her.
Right.
And other people were not very nice to her. So the ones that she could associate with when she went into that.
Yeah.
Place was, you know, the ones that she probably wanted to associate with.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
the whole thing there though with his dad was on the train.
That's in Split.
It is, right. Yeah. You're right. But I'm saying like
that was another thing where you didn't know
it was
that,
just another, well, because when he said he died in a train wreck, like they didn't say he died 18 years ago in a train wreck.
Well, right.
You know, and you know, we but remember at that point we didn't even know that these two movies were connected.
And Kevin's thing was always that he went away.
Yeah.
He didn't know he died in a train wreck.
Right.
And that other people did. Right. Obviously his doctor did.
Yeah.
And Split, and you know, it was in his file and everything. So it was one of those things where it's like when they show him go to the train station and take a flower there, and that you're like, well, okay.
Yeah.
He just thinks his dad went away.
Maybe, yeah.
That's when the Beast came out, too.
I think this proves your point, though, about Shyamalan having planned this out and not just
at that point, he was probably just like, you know, he might have wrote it the way he wrote it and then went, wait a minute. I can put this in as an Unbreakable sequel. Yeah. Indirectly.
Yeah. Yeah, so the Beast, though, wasn't necessarily because his dad went away. It was because his mom abused the crap out of him.
And she's Unbreakable, too.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah.
So.
And they're in the stadium. He bumps into
her. Yeah, she's the one
that's abusing her kid. Yeah. Yeah.
So, I mean, it was nice how intricately done, even if it's a retcon of sorts, that they did this.
I don't feel like there was any.
I don't feel like it is, but it's like at the same time, like it could be perceived that way. So,
I don't know. I think that he had it all planned out. I think that this and
you think
this movie and Split were definitely planned together. And that you know, the whole fact of Kevin's father dying on the train was just a factor in it. And then to make it the simpatico thing that, you know, Mr. Glass created the hero and the villain.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, not the great villain, but just the villain that would be the brute.
Yeah.
And that was just, you know.
It's like Lex Luthor creating Parasite.
Well, yeah.
You know, or something like that.
I mean, it's just the poetic thing that, you know, one incident could create two super beings.
Yeah.
So.
And I mean, he was super in his own right with his intellect and everything. And
Glass was, you know, a unique individual too. You don't meet many people that could do what he could do.
Right.
So, you know, he was on a level of like a pretender, pretty much.
He's a 12th level intellect.
Maybe.
I did love when he pulled up the armrest.
All the drugs were there. All drugs, yeah.
That was really funny.
It's like Shyamalan wrote it where every little thing was explained perfectly.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, bringing up the thing to Casey about comic books and Casey going and buying comic books.
Right.
So she could see what it's all about and seeing things that, you know, were similar to her situation.
Yeah.
It was just one of those things.
Joseph being in the comic shop when she was there was really
those
cool.
Those two were crossing paths like continuously because Joseph and her went to the same school.
Yep.
And then, you know, they were at the sanitarium around the same time. And
so I tell you what, I'm really looking forward to buying this so I can pause it.
Oh,
and,
sure.
Like, look at certain things that just kind of went by
and
faster.
Watch it with a commentary.
Well, yeah.
Hopefully this is one where they could maybe get Sam Jackson and
Bruce Willis.
Not Bruce. I don't think Bruce Willis would do commentary, but Sam Jackson and McAvoy.
Oh, that would be great.
Yeah.
I love
Nick Fury and Charles Xavier in a room together doing commentary.
I love James McAvoy. I think he is an amazing actor. I think he brings something different to every role that he does.
Well, yeah.
And at no point do you watch this movie and think, oh, that's Professor X. Just like at no point do you watch X-Men with it say, oh, that's Leto 2. And, you know.
Nobody says that.
Did you
Everybody's
see,
like, what's Leto 2?
Did you ever see Filthy with him in it?
I don't think so.
He's a dirty cop.
No, I'm not.
It's really good. I don't know if it's still on HBO.
I've seen the one where he was
not.
A college student and Alice Eve is in it.
Yeah.
That one's really good. I can't remember the name of it, though.
Yeah, he's kind of a dirtball in that one, too.
He can play pretty much anything, so, you know.
Yeah, he's really, really good actor. So,
well, he's one of the, like, actors, modern actors that is very, like, versatile.
I mean, you look at what he did here. So, in the movie, we got Jade, which was the teenage girl when he was, like, laying on the ground.
Well, yeah, we got to see ones that we only got to see in video clips in the last movie.
So, there was Orwell that we got this time around, the film historian, who's kind of, then there's Barry, who was, you know, effeminate. Then we have Patricia again, Hedwig. Then we got Anne and Mary Reynolds, who are the Irish twins.
Yeah.
That was really cool. There's Dennis, Norma, the Southern lady, Luke, the Southern man who spoils movies.
Spoiled
man. And then Mr. Pritchard, the professor of Japanese cinema.
Was it? I thought it was Japanese culture.
It's no. It says here cinema. It might have been culture as a whole, and you know the write up is
Japanese
wrong. But
culture, but
but that he was great, like as well.
Well, just all the different characters.
But when you have someone who can play all of this and then be should have the vulnerability that Kevin had, and then the physicality of the Beast.
Yeah.
Now I haven't like dug too deep into this because I don't necessarily want to know the answer, but do you think they did like some sort of prosthesis or was it digital, like stretching him, like when he became the Beast and he got bigger? Cause like they definitely like had him become more veiny in the chest area and stuff.
Well, I think
like
the veins might've been,
but I mean, that was makeup, but you think like the traps and stuff were just still always there.
I think it was just him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, cause he's like, I mean, he's jacked.
Yeah. Well, so. For this, he looked like he got jacked. So, you know, and this, there's a year between filming, so I'm sure he didn't go down much.
No. So.
Well, he had to do one X-Men movie and probably a couple other movies.
He's Jack Professor X from pushing the wheelchair.
Well, you know.
So he's got guns. I really, really enjoyed this movie. So
were you surprised that they killed them all?
I was, but I was good with it. Like, at no point. Well,
it made
was
sense.
Like, it did. It was like, this is a great. So, this movie is a great natural ending to this trilogy.
Yeah.
And they're not going to do any more.
That you know of.
I mean, Jason Blomstedt came out and said they weren't planning to do any more. So who knows?
Oh, yeah.
But like this, it was a great way to end this story.
Yeah.
But at the same time, introduce a larger universe that they could always tap back into.
Sure, yeah.
Like the way Invincible ended, right?
Yeah.
Like it's over, but like.
They could come back.
It's not over.
Yeah.
You know, so. Yeah, my, you know, I have a few things I'm curious about. Like, how close is this to his original idea for a sequel back in, you know, 99, 2000, 2001,
did he have
whatever?
A sequel plan?
Who knows?
Like, I don't think he did. I think it was just, that's the end.
I mean, because he never
really does follow-ups.
My question
would be, why didn't you tie in Haley Joel Osment's character to this whole universe? Because that could have been an ability, too.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And why wasn't the village tied into this? Because that could have been part of it, too.
Well, they could have been part of the Black Clover Society, where they take
exactly.
the super people yeah. out, and that's where they
now Shyamalan's like, you're listening to this and going, damn it, that would have worked.
If M. Night Shyamalan is listening to this, like, he's done something really wrong in
he's
life.
He's listening to everything.
No, like I said, this movie was really enjoyable. I'm really happy that I got to see it when I did. I'm really happy that I did not rewatch Unbreakable and Split before going in, because
I watched them about a month or so.
I mean,
ago.
I watched them a while ago, right. Yeah, but like not having it super fresh, like really kept me from like thinking back to things while I was trying to pay attention to the movie.
Oh, okay, I gotcha. I just remember everything, so
you're like Mr. Glass. Just less breakable.
Yeah. I'm both. Little Mr. Glass, little David Dunn.
Yeah, but your knee's all messed up and so is your foot.
So that's my weakness. One leg.
Kroger's your weakness.
Nah, it's not a weakness.
It's your enemy.
Nope, not at all.
No, I'm kidding. But yeah, I thought this movie was really, really good. I'm really happy to see M. Night doing this kind of storytelling again.
Well, yeah, I hope to see him do more with Blumhouse than that.
So I think Blumhouse has really done a great job taking it, a very creative director, and putting him on the right track.
Jason Blum is a fan. Like, I can tell that he's a fan first of this stuff. And, you know, some things are hits and some things are misses. And, you know, like I said, I didn't have a lot of great things to say about Halloween, but it was a good, like, nod to Halloween.
Yeah.
But, like, you know, some of the original stuff, like The Conjuring and Insidious, stuff like that, it's like, that's great.
I mean, look at the movies he's...
Well, yeah.
I mean, he has produced... He's been producing since 1995.
Well, right.
And
but the stuff that's Blumhouse,
yeah,
that's the stuff I'm talking about. The stuff that, like, you know,
like Ouija, things like that
is like his stuff now. So, you know, working for other people producing stuff and working for yourself producing stuff is a whole different game. So, you know, he's become one of the like newer producers of good stuff, in Hollywood.
So, I mean, he's doing Us with Jordan Peele.
Well, he did Get Out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and I was just talking about what he has.
They should
Happy
previews
Death
for
Day
everything
to you.
That he was doing. So,
you know, he produced that Black Klansman with Spike Lee, is up for Best Picture. So, yeah, it's just
I need to see that one.
It's on I think it's streaming. Maybe not.
I'm sure it is.
Yeah. Anyway, I he did the Purge movies. That was the other thing.
Yeah.
He did Jim and the Holograms.
Yeah.
Interesting. I just really like it when you have creative people come together and be creative again. They're creative in a different way. And, you know, it's like M. Night went away for a little while, and here he is back, like, as a changed director who, you know, I would have loved, like, I liked the idea of The Happening. It was just poor execution.
Oh, like the story. Yeah. The story itself was a good idea. Yeah. But like the way that.
Like, I just think people committing mass probably, suicide for whatever reason. Yeah. Yeah. Like, I would have liked to have seen what he would have done, like what Jason would have done with this one or with The Village, which I actually really like, even with the ending. But like, I would have liked to have seen how he handled
that.
What's
wrong with the ending? I don't think there's anything really wrong with the ending.
I think some people didn't like it.
Yeah.
Like,
well, because it had multiple endings? Or?
Well, there was that, but. I love the fact that it was just a bunch of people who decided to, you know, take their wealth and go live off the grid like it was 1840 something.
Yep.
So.
Yep. That. And, you know, I haven't seen Lady in the Water in years, so that one I'd have to go back and watch.
I just remember not liking that one.
That one was more like what he has said. That one was done for his kids when they were little kids because it's a fairy tale.
Yeah.
And that, and it's like, you know, it just didn't translate to the theater.
Which happens.
To the screen, I guess you would say.
You know, there was obviously The Last Airbender.
Which I think is on a streaming network, so we'll get to see it now.
It's on Amazon and Hulu both right now.
Oh, I'll finally get to watch it.
He did After Earth, which was really bad.
I didn't have a problem with After Earth. It just didn't have a story.
Yeah.
It was just, you know.
Devil wasn't very good.
Devil was awesome.
I didn't like Devil.
Well, you know, we all don't have great taste, so.
Anywho.
Devil is probably one of his best, like, things that he worked on because it was just the one room story kind of thing. Yeah.
I mean, he didn't direct Devil.
He's a producer and a co-writer.
It, but I don't know. I just, you know, I think Devil, maybe I need to revisit it because I was so angry about Airbender.
Yeah.
So.
I don't know. I've enjoyed Devil.
I stuck Airbender on the other day for like a minute, and it's like, I really do not want them to do a live action version of that show now.
Yeah.
It's just really hard to make bending look cool in reality. Like, when you draw it, yeah, it looks awesome. But
I mean, the bending in the show wasn't like anything like that they can't do for real. I mean, rocks fly, fire flies.
It just didn't look good. Like the water bending looked horrible. The earth bending or the air bending.
I'm sure
there wasn't
spend a lot of money on that movie, but they're going to spend it on the show.
I hope so.
They spent what their budget was, and the budget probably just got.
It had a $150 million budget,
which was not a lot.
In 2010, that was.
It's still not a lot.
Anyway.
Think about how much of like publicity and all that stuff goes to the
budget. No, that's just the production budget. That doesn't count any of that stuff. So,
that's not a lot.
The sad thing is it still made $300 million at the box office.
Well, yeah, it made it probably over in China and all that stuff. So,
anyway, I like just to get back on track. I really like what he did here. I'm really happy.
Number one movie this weekend.
Yeah.
Congrats.
Congrats
to Jason M.
I'm looking forward to more and more. So yeah, and you know, they did this movie for $20 million, and as of recording it's at $95 million box office.
We'll see what they do next.
So yep. Yeah, absolutely. I'm excited to see what's next from these guys.
Adventure movie. Do an adventure movie.
Space.
No, not space. Yeah. But just like a, you know, just like an Indiana Jones type movie.
Oh, that'd be
because,
cool.
Because, you know, Shyamalan, like, put on Sixth Sense and Unbreakable, he put, like, videos that he made as a kid.
Yeah.
And it was an adventure story. And it's like, you want to do an adventure story, do it.
Bring Dev Patel back and do something cool with him. Because Dev Patel's awesome.
Yeah. Maybe they don't work together well.
I don't know. So, all right. Well. Anything else?
Bring Spencer Tree Clark back.
Yeah, do something cool with Spencer Tree Clark. That would be awesome.
And Anna Taylor.
And Anna Taylor, yeah.
Yeah.
That was the other thing. I'm really happy they didn't ship those two.
Yeah.
You know, we didn't even talk about the ending. Do we want to talk about, like,
the final ending? Nah.
Like, I want to leave that alone.
Yeah.
I'm really happy that they did not ship.
Because that would have been kind of creepy.
Well.
Since she's still in high school.
Yeah, there's that. But, like, I feel like there's other directors who would have done that. Like, who would have been like, oh, well, she has a crush on him or whatever.
Big thing, but, you know.
Yeah.
It was the idea that their stories intertwined, but their stories never were meant to be a crossover.
Right. And what about
I mean, the whole comic book thing was there.
They were the team up.
Well, yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But, yeah, what about Elijah's mom still popping around out there being awesome?
That wasn't unexpected.
No, yeah. But, well, I mean, but he's
definitely, I like that she told him that he was spectacular.
Yeah.
It's like, because she loved him. He did wrong. She knew he did wrong. But, yeah, he was spectacular. In the end, he was spectacular because he did what he did.
Right.
So that was cool for her to say that to him. And that Shyamalan wrote all these characters really well with the emotion that they needed to have.
I think not only did he write them well, but he directed them well.
Oh, yeah. There was going to be no doubt with that one because both those movies were good. And that, yeah. But, yep.
All right. Anything else?
The Sixth Sense 2.
Please no.
No, that's not gonna happen. I just thought it would have been a cool idea that they would have, like, even just mentioning that character.
Maybe, yeah.
And like saying that he was one of them.
Or just have him walk by.
Yeah.
Have him walk by at the end and be like, he just sees the three of them as ghosts, like walking towards the light.
Yeah, maybe.
I don't know. That would have been dumb.
That would have been weird.
Yep. All right. Well, on that note, anything left to add?
Nope, that's it.
All right. Thanks for listening, guys. Make sure you check us out on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram. Check out our Patreon, back the show. Then we can do cool stuff for you guys when we're at Celebration. And anything else?
Well, you're going to get Grunberg's autograph?
Heck yeah.
You should.
I'm going to have him sign that.
Actually, you should just get your picture with him.
Just shaking my fist at him.
Oh, yeah. Brother. They'll do whatever you want. So.
I know. They're dancing monkeys. They'll, like, for as much, whatever, how much money I give them, they'll just do things.
Yes. I don't know if that's the way I would put that, but, you know, I think it's all in good fun.
I do like the things that Jason Momoa does in the pictures, like, with couples.
Yeah.
Like, that's a really funny thing where he's, like, holding the guy's face with his arm, like, around
pushing,
his girl.
Pushing the guy away, type really thing. Funny. Yeah.
All right. We'll talk to you guys next week.
Later.
Bye. The FS Podcast is recorded in Kings Mills, Ohio, just north of Cincinnati. You can find new episodes every Sunday on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, our website, or anywhere podcasts are downloaded. The show is hosted by Johnny Podorf and me, Brian Tudor. You can find more information about the show online at infamouspodcast.com or follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram as @infamouspodcast to stay up to date on the latest news about the show and what's going on in the world of comics, movies, TV, and more. We also have a Patreon page, patreon.com/infamouspodcast. We have some great rewards for our patrons, and we're looking for help to grow the show to bring you more of the content you want to hear. You can find Johnny online at Johnny Podorf, and I'm on most social networks as @BrianTudor. Music in this episode was provided by Michael Henry from meetmichaelhenry.com. So, whenever you're listening to us, have a great day, night, evening, weekend, whenever it is, and we'll see you next time. Thanks for listening. Later.